Chapter 5, Teaching and Making Assessments in Waldorf Classrooms. The 9 Waldorf teachers in our study made continual classroom assessments as the core of a comprehensive assessment strategy that also included teacher collaboration and formal reports. We will discuss first the assessments that our teachers made either while teaching or in later reflections on individual students' class participation, performances, and products. These classroom assessments, in assessment literature, also known as instructional or informal assessments, were shared continually with students and regularly with parents and colleagues, according to teachers' accounts. Classroom assessments were aggregated into later written reports. In Chapter 6, we present the participating school's policy for formal reports, along with guidelines for reporting that we are recommended by OSNA in alignment with the age-appropriate principle that governs all aspects of Waldorf pedagogy. The word assessment refers to both assessing as an activity and the product or result of the assessing activity. The context should make clear which is meant. One broad definition that fits with the Waldorf approach is the deliberate use of many methods to gather evidence to indicate that students are meeting standards. Wiggins and McTighe, 2005, page 4. Some scholars distinguish between assessment and evaluation. Assessment is the evidence gathered in the classroom, and evaluation is the teacher's later judgment of the evidence in relation to a learning goal. The Waldorf teachers we worked with seem to use these terms interchangeably. Their later written assessments or reports discussed at the end of this chapter were evaluations in the sense of this distinction. We asked teachers at the end of each block to state the evidence on which they based their assessments of progress toward or attainment of each goal that was specified at the beginning of the block. The evidence depended on the type of learning goal or objective. In general, teachers of the higher grades, 6th and 7th, to some extent 5th, based assessments of subject-related knowledge and skills, cognitive goals, on performance tasks, written assignments, participation in class discussions, quizzes, tests, and homework. Teachers of the lower grades, 3rd and 4th, to some extent 5th, relied on observation of performance in subject-related and group activities, the writing and rewriting of dictations, and participation in recall. Teachers' observations were the main means of assessment of development in physical, social, and affective capacities in all grades. Such observations were usually based on quite specific criteria that are spelled out in the school's standards. For example, was this third grader able to take turns in games and activities? Has she begun to work out differences when conflicts arise with respect and self-control? Was the fifth grader able to be open and willing to work with feedback from teacher and classmates? Did he work individually or in a group without continued adult guidance and intervention? Express a positive attitude toward the school? Practice inclusivity in social situations? Did the sixth or seventh grader assume responsibility for self and work? Work independently and quietly with focus on a task for up to 45 minutes? Keep personal and school belongings well organized? Was she consistently prepared and ready for class on time? Did he accept being at fault and taking responsibility for his actions? Demonstrate consistent good sportsmanship in both cooperative activities and competitive games. We look in Chapter 6 at the student learning standards that were the reference for this type of assessment. The importance and continuity of classroom assessments. Classroom assessments are assessments that are embedded in daily classroom activities. Classroom activities, projects, assignments, discussions were the only basis on which the teachers made not only instructional during instruction, but also end-of-block or end-of-year assessments. There were no other assessments. We researchers ascribed continuity to those assessments because in the minds of the teachers, instruction and assessment were not necessarily two different activities. Even when, in the higher grades, they described the giving of tests or quizzes, they intended such occasions not as a way for them, the teachers, to measure learning, but primarily as a different way of engaging students with the material. They spoke of a test as further immersion in the subject, or as an opportunity for students to appraise their own grasp of the material and their own level of competence. Teachers also viewed formal assessments written after class in this way, that is, as mainly for the benefit of students. The continuous daily assessing reported by our teachers was what Wiggins and McTighe, 2005, pages 165 to 168, call assessing along the way. Assessment needs to be a central part of teaching, and therefore, good assessments will depend on backward design, Wiggins, 1998. A method similar to our teacher's approach to planning learning activities, discussed in Chapter 7. Many of the assessments that the teachers reported making were what educators call formative assessments, wherein evidence is actually used to adapt the teaching work to meet learning needs. Black and Others, 2004, page 10. See also Erasion, 2005, pages 4 through 23. Boston, 2002. However, the teachers in the case studies did not usually use that term in describing what they did. We identified six main characteristics of the student assessments that teachers reported carrying out. Together, these provide a picture of the overall approach to assessment, what was assessed, how, and for what purpose in these nine cases. 1. Open-ended, age-appropriate assessment, which characterized all the assessing activity, including final reports. 2. Comprehensive assessment of capacities and capabilities in all domains, especially assessment of students' quality of engagement in experience. 3. Continuous assessment of progress in math and language arts. 4. Multidimensional or aggregate assessment, that is, assessment based on diverse variables and inputs. 5. Student main lesson books as demonstration of subject-specific competence. 6. Assessment for the purpose of motivation in order to further learning. The sixth, assessment for further learning, was the governing emphasis. These characteristics, used as headings for the discussion below, were interwoven and comprised various specific strategies. For example, the use of student self-assessment and group projects, which were common to all nine cases. 1. Teachers' assessments were open-ended and age-appropriate. As we have seen, these teachers framed their expectation as benchmarks along a continuum of open-ended development. It was clear from the language of their journals that assessment of attainment of benchmarks was likewise open-ended, especially in the case of capacity development, but also for knowledge and skills. When asked whether she understood any of her assessments as summative or final, one of the fourth grade teachers said, "I never consider any assessment final. Everything is a moment in time and very open-ended, even if it is a block test that summarizes the block. I give a lot of verbal feedback along the way. I give written feedback on rough drafts of the writing. I guess you could call the block test summative, but if a student does not score well, then she gets another chance and I record both scores." Open-endedness was not without reference points. In the background of open-ended assessment were the age-calibrated standards implicit in the Waldorf curriculum's sequence of subjects and expressed in detail in each school's official standards. The practice of extended, open-ended assessment is a function of the principle of age appropriateness that guides the delivery of the Waldorf curriculum. Waldorf pedagogy responds to the realities of the continual emergence and maturing of children's capacities. In this framework, to be valid and fair, assessment of progress must always be provisional. Using benchmarks for progress rather than endpoints is, of course, characteristic of the making of classroom or interim assessments by non-Waldorf teachers. The difference in the Waldorf approach is the conscious attention paid to stages of development in all areas, not only cognition. The narrative reports that we describe in Chapter 6 illustrate this. They always include a descriptive picture of what to expect in regard to new or changing abilities, interests, emotional challenges, and in general, how the child of this age relates to the world. Assessments were open-ended specifically in relation to the objectives for the subject matter of that block. Teachers often referred to the fact that blocks on the same subjects would occur at least twice, sometimes three times a year, and at increasingly complex levels. Therefore, content and skills not mastered during the first block of the subject could be pursued the next time. So, for example, when many students in Mary's botany block did not succeed in being able to name parts of the plant, she forwarded that goal to the next botany block, to come later that year. Students whose tree journals were incomplete were instructed to continue working on them, even though the block was over. No one was penalized for failing to meet a deadline, and all students eventually would do all required work, she said. Assessments were naturally open-ended in relation to long-term progress toward what we have termed above as the life goal, which is to say, in relationship to the development of the capacities of the individual child. Here, we must take account of an important Waldorf pedagogical practice that directly affects all assessment. Class teachers are trained to spend a few minutes every night in open-minded reflection on each individual child in their class. According to Waldorf educators, the nightly reflection has many practical benefits in daily teaching. It helps teachers maintain objectivity toward the child and ensure that their appraisal of a given child's abilities is unaffected by personal and subjective reactions. It nurtures a teacher's interest in the individuals in her class. Class time is busy and filled with in-the-moment interactions. A teacher's daily reflection on each child is helpful in developing her ability to respond appropriately and constructively at each moment the next day. It helps her avoid quick judgments and thus strengthens the validity of open-ended assessment. She maintains her awareness that the child is on a path of development toward becoming someone who will manifest only in the future. Assessments of progress along the way are meaningful mainly in relation to that future. All the teachers in our study told us that they practiced the nightly reflection on individual children and attributed to this practice an enhancement of their understanding, empathy, and skill in dealing with students in classroom situations, whether pedagogical or social. Bill described the nightly reflection, which he said is more about students' general well-being, physical, social, emotional, than about academics, is a gigantic part of the work in a Waldorf school. Clara told us that the practice is very, very important and affected how she met the children the next day. When she thought back over the day, she asked herself, for example, were there good moments for the student? Was she challenged? Did she participate in recall? It would be impossible with this practice for any child to fall through the cracks, as we hear sometimes happens in other schools. She said, it fills the teacher with love and sympathy. 2. Teachers' assessments were comprehensive of all domains. Recalling that Waldorf teachers think in terms of thinking, feeling, and willing, for clarity, we use in this discussion the more common terminology of the domains, cognitive, affective, and psychomotor, with the addition of the social domain because of its importance in the Waldorf curriculum and standards. Most of our teachers spoke of trying for a balanced assessment of all the developing or potential interdependent capabilities of their students. The term comprehensive assessment best captures this characteristic of the assessments made by our teachers, assessment that comprehends all domains or the whole child. Teachers made assessments of benchmarks achieved in the development of physical or affective capabilities or affective capacities by observation, closely following and tracking individuals in this regard. Likewise, when the stated goal was the engagement in an experience, they assessed attainment with observation. In her geography block, Rosa saw that all the students could point in the four directions quickly and without hesitation. She observed that they were able to accurately draw the compass rose on their maps. She heard that they succeeded in memorizing the poems and were able to play the new recorder songs. She observed their engagement in morning circle exercises with beanbags, reciting times tables. She kept a notebook to record individual progress or difficulties. None of our teachers assumed that they would remember their daily observations. They recorded them with tracking systems that we discuss below. We always asked them, "How do you know?" when they reported making such assessments. They used observation of actions, interactions, products, and performances, discernment, reflection, and intuition. Any observer could confirm that a student was capable of, for example, consideration of others, moral sensitivity, cooperation, a social skill, or analytic thinking, a cognitive ability, by witnessing a demonstration or seeing a product. but only teachers who knew students well could assess whether this represented progress. Our teachers were clear that their ability to judge progress depended on their knowing the students intimately and interacting with them in many different situations. They knew the strengths, weaknesses, achievements, and stumbling blocks of each child and could assess accordingly. In their comprehensive assessing, our teachers of all grades included the social realm. They noted progress in meeting age-related social goals in every subject block. They continually evaluated students in regard to social skills, interpersonal relationships, group cooperation, character development, habits, and dispositions. Some of the criteria they mentioned for assessment of social development were: was a student experiencing difficulties with other students? Were there group dynamics that isolated a student? Did students show appropriate interest in each other? What was the quality of a student's relationship with teachers and other adults? Teachers carried out assessment of social skills involved in group and artistic activities continuously, watching for and evaluating cooperation, sensitivity, openness to others' views, patience, tolerance, consideration, and tact at levels attainable for the age. Against what standards were evaluation of social abilities measured? While common sense, experience working with children, and a basic knowledge of the stages of child development should give teachers the benchmarks for social behavior against which to make assessments, most Waldorf schools have also incorporated these benchmarks in their published standards. We discuss the standards for our participating schools below. In devising and applying measures of progress, our teachers were flexible in order to take into account individual variations. For example, giving slow, but capable, students the time they needed to do their best work, or asking quicker students to write longer compositions. Because Waldorf teachers know their students well, they believe they can make appropriate adjustments in the expectations for and assessments of individual students. Assessment in relation to individual potential is inadvisable, according to Erasian, 2005, pages 298 to 300. Because teacher perceptions of potential can often be inaccurate, and also because the resulting grades can be confusing to outsiders. Similarly, he advises against basing grades on rates of improvement, giving a high grade to someone who made great strides but still did not meet norm reference standards. Waldorf teachers would agree that predicting the potential of a child is not within the purview of the teacher. They always take individual progress into account, however. As Chapter 6 shows, their main formal assessments are narratives, not grades, and the student's achievement in relation to age or grade norms can be explained along with praise or critique of achievement in relation to progress in the subject being taught, levels of engagement, development of social skills, and physical development. Laura stated her plan for her fourth grade geography block to assess each student at his or her own level of progress. In assessing achievement in chemistry, where one requirement was write-ups of experiments, Bill was careful to bear in mind that two students who were poor writers had been enthusiastic and competent participants in demonstrations. In assigning parts for the play, Lynn made sure that every individual child would be challenged, but still able to succeed, and assess their achievements accordingly. Teachers continually assess the quality of students' experience. Given that the paramount goal for every block was experiential engagement in the block subject, it was not surprising that the teachers referred almost daily to their assessment of attainment of that goal. They assessed the degree and quality of students' engagement in the topic or activity at hand by observing attentiveness, interest, and enthusiasm. Their journals were full of accounts of their observations of both individuals and the class as a whole. These observations help teachers understand and evaluate what students were gaining from the experiences. We note in Chapter 4 that some educators argue for a distinction between learning goals, which are ends, and activities aimed at attainment of goals, which are means, because of the difficulties involved in assessing activities. Erasian, 2005, pages 67 to 72, Anderson and others, 2001, pages 17 and 18, 242 through 245. As we have said, in Waldorf pedagogy, especially in the lower grades, activities or experiences are ends in themselves. When our teachers stated goals in the general experiential terms that Erasian suggests avoiding, that is, students will appreciate, understand, enjoy, and so forth, they believed assessments of these more general outcomes possible with observation, observed enthusiasm, verbalizations, gestures, eye contact, cooperation with others, if a group project, were evidence that experiential goals were being met. These observations could be indicative also of the learning of content and acquisition of skills, a judgment that they tried to confirm with other evidence. In any case, they did also state specific expectations for acquisition of specific skills and knowledge. In relation to this, it is important to reiterate that, as should be evident from examples, the teachers structured the activities around rich content, activities that they hoped would stimulate curiosity for a personal feeling connection with the subject. Teachers cited, as evidence, various indicators of interest and engagement, strong or weak. For example, during their presentations of new material, they noticed and recorded in their journals shining eyes, sustained concentration, blank faces, fidgeting, talking to neighbors, hands raised high, and many questions. One of them noted, energy a bit low. Another wrote, singing lively, mood much more awake, energy strong, and later, quiet, quiet listening. Another wrote, there was a quiet attentiveness with clear eye contact from all. Even, she named a student, kept his head up, although he was very tired. On another occasion, she wrote, everyone was sitting up, looking at me, reacting, laughing, and being somber, following and taking in the story. Carl wrote that when he talked too long one day, he could see it in their eyes. Rosa assessed engagement by observing body language. In one journal entry, she wrote that the children listened with glistening eyes. Lynn's students listened intently to one of the Old Testament stories. On another occasion, the whole class was riveted. During a map drawing exercise in geography, Rosa assessed engagement by watching closely. Students were clearly engaged because they were not talking and were doing the work, and then wanted to do more than she had assigned. She made visual assessments of how focused each one was, gauging interest level, ability to concentrate, and effort. She took their observed strong engagement as evidence of growth in understanding the subject. She assessed the product, the map, as well, for accuracy, but initially she focused her assessing attention on the activity itself. Clara reported high enthusiasm at the beginning of the geology block, which she judged from her students' smiles, their eyes lighting up, and the quick raising of their hands to speak. Another day, she reported that they were fascinated. When we asked how she knew this, she said they couldn't wait, even though she asked them to wait, to ask their questions, and they were very, very attentive and excited, making ooh and ah noises. Bill wrote about a chemistry demonstration. They were all watching, listening attentively. Clara said that when she told her class the myth of the founding of Rome, they were absolutely with me and quiet at the end. For quite a number of seconds, they sat perfectly quiet and still at the end of the story. When Lynn told the children the story of the expulsion from paradise in the third grade block on Old Testament stories, she reported, "You could have heard a pin drop." She judged by their facial expressions that they were moved by the power of this story. Bill took his chemistry students outside to do some radical combustion displays that could not be safely done in the classroom. And these experiences were, he remarked, deeply impressive for the students. About a demonstration in the geology block with limestone, marble, and carbonated soda, Clara wrote, "They were thrilled to see the lime in the stones bubbling away. They could taste, feel, and see the evidence of the limestone being worn away." Experiential assessments were not always positive. Beverly observed closely during a chemistry class that some were paying attention, but others were distracted or chatting with a neighbor. Laura wrote that one day's response in the geography block had the feeling of Monday lackluster. In this case, she addressed the problem by getting the students moving with more circle activities. Laura observed that her class was droopy during circle and shifted to more vigorous movement games. Teachers used indications of disengagement and boredom as signals to shift the content or the method of presentation. More examples follow. Clara wrote about the day she narrated the Punic Wars in her Roman history block. Hannibal is always so moving for the students. You can see some identifying with Hannibal and some with Rome. In his fifth grade Greek culture block, Carl told the story of the Odyssey over the course of several days. As 12-year-olds, his students were fascinated by the details of Odysseus having to cover his nakedness with an olive branch in front of the beautiful Nausicaa. Third grade teacher Lynn wrote, "The children recalled the story, told the day before, of Noah's Ark and finished the drawing. The recall was very thorough and richly retold by many of the children with offerings from some children who rarely speak. During the story of Sodom and Gomorrah," she said, "they sat in rapt attention. The whole class was riveted." Although assessment of students' level of engagement was important, it was not the only strategy in an arsenal of assessment methods used by teachers. No teacher in our study assumed that lively participation was necessarily evidence of learning and retention, though most felt it made learning more likely. In all blocks, they extended their assessment of engagement to encompass other kinds of evidence. Performance assessments, assessment of experiential learning. Many of the teachers' assessments of students' engagement and experience, like those in the above examples, fit the definition of performance assessment in Erasian's assessment textbook, 2005, pages 231 to 234. They evaluated the results of the instruction while learning was taking place rather than later, as in assessment of a tangible piece of evidence. In every block, teachers' performance assessments were central in assessing attainment of stated goals for the block. Claudia set this task for her third graders in the house building block. She had them select a type of traditional house from the indigenous culture. They were studying Native American culture as part of this block. Build a model and present it to the class. She sent home to parents an information sheet explaining the assignment and asking them to help. The children were to do research in at least three books. She specifically excluded internet research in order that they get experience in looking through books. Build a model with their parents' help and present it to the class with a 10-minute oral report explaining who, what, when, where, and why. She did not assign individual grades because, she said, doing so would risk diminishing a third grade child's experience of the joy of doing and learning, learning for its own sake. At the same time, she made notes about individuals' progress, as discussed below in the section on tracking assessments, toward the content-specific goals of this block, which included understanding the relationship between Native American shelters and ecological habitats. For a lab session in his chemistry block, Bill had students work in pairs to test a variety of substances for chemical reactions and had them keep notes on their observations. The session was an opportunity to assess how well they followed directions, how well they cooperated, how careful they were in observing safety in handling equipment and substances, and the quality of their academic work. Claudia assessed students' progress in math by observing them following a recipe that contained many fractions. Following the recipe was the test, a performance by which she assessed their proficiency in fractions, along with several other pieces of evidence, and also their ability to apply that knowledge in a practical situation. In geology, Clara's students demonstrated their comprehension of one aspect of the subject by each researching and then making a papier-mâché model of a well-known volcano, followed by a factual and historical presentation to the class. Lynn's third grade play was a prime occasion for performance assessment. She assessed every student for success in following directions, cooperation, memory skills, clarity of speech, appropriate expressiveness, and many other capabilities. The utility and importance of performance assessments is now well established. For example, Erasian 2005, pages 239 to 263, Starko 2010, page 275, Wiggins, 1998. A teacher may simply have students do what she wants them to know how to do, or she may design a more complex task with the aim of eliciting understanding. Wiggins and McTighe, 2005, pages 5 and 6. Shepherd, 2000, calls for a broader range of assessment tools to more directly connect assessment to ongoing instruction, with more open-ended performance tasks to ensure that students are able to reason critically, to solve complex problems, and to apply their knowledge in real-world contexts, pages 6 through 8. Performance assessments during the circle. Assessments of engagement and experience began as teachers greeted students individually when they entered the classroom. She told us that eye contact and a brief verbal exchange were important for identifying both positive and negative attitudes that could affect students' readiness for morning's work. Mary wrote, "Firm handshakes and direct eye contacts with added smiles are a clear sign to me that the students are looking forward to the day." Morning circle activities were an opportunity for assessment of readiness to learn and a number of capabilities important for cognition. Teachers closely watched, for example, facial expressions to assess focus and alertness, social interactions to assess social skills, physical coordination to assess kinesthetic abilities like visual and spatial orientation. Other assessment criteria were who was participating, who was enthusiastic, who sang well. See Vignette 4. Vignette 4, Carl's fifth grade opening activities. After greeting each student at the door and reviewing the day's schedule, Carl led his students in math drills, first with beanbag games, then with a mental math challenge. They were to take the two-digit number you get when you multiply 8 times 2. Add those two digits, take that number, and multiply it by itself. Then add 9, then divide by 2, and so on through some dozen steps, with only a brief pause at each step. The students followed in their heads. No one used pencil and paper, and 2/3 had the right answer at the end, which he knew by having them raise the correct number of fingers. The answer was 1. Then, together, they went through the problem again, step by step, in order to ensure that those who had not done so before could understand how to arrive at the correct solution. Then he gave them a quick oral quiz on the state capitals, allowing them to ask one other person for help. This quiz was a textbook definition formative assessment to give him an idea of the extent of their knowledge so he could plan instruction accordingly. To finish these preliminaries to the main lesson, which altogether took 45 minutes, they recited from memory with no pauses or mistakes the entire "I Have a Dream" speech of Martin Luther King. Some lines spoken by a pair of students. They also sang "This Land is Your Land," all verses and in parts accompanied by Carl, who is proficient on the guitar. Carl was able, simultaneously, to assess class and individuals' progress in math skills, alertness and readiness for more cognitive work, memory retention, they don't recite the poem every day, and group dynamics. Lynn reported that when guiding and watching children do a series of clapping, stamping, and singing exercises, she could draw connections between cognitive abilities and such motor skills as being able to isolate both hands and feet. If students were able to move hands and feet independently, they would more likely be able to look up and down while copying from the blackboard without losing their place. Rosa assessed one recognition negatively, writing that a poem fell flat, which she knew because students fidgeted and were distracted. A beanbag toss game that she expected would calm them and enable them to focus was challenging for them and therefore more rousing than calming. On another occasion, she shortened circle and took them on a walk outdoors, which resulted in a breathing, calm, and engaged mood. And back in class, they were decidedly more settled. Claudia directed her third graders in a concentration march, wherein they stepped forward around a circle, counting out loud and clapping on each number up to 10. They began again, this time stepping backward on the number 10 without clapping. Then again, this time stepping backward on 9. And so on, until the entire circle was walking backward up to 10. When she judged them competent at this, she had them reverse the sequence. She intended this march to maximize children's alertness, concentration, coordination, and focus, which she assessed as they performed it. The third grade teachers used variations of another game that was useful for assessing language or math skills. In one version, Pass the Acorn, One child sat in the center with his eyes closed while the others, in a circle, passed around an acorn. When the center child said acorn, the child holding it had to give 6 words starting with a letter chosen by the center child. Teachers assess the group dynamics of this performance for development of individual social and physical motor skills. Teachers assess the group dynamics of this performance for development of individual social and physical motor abilities. Recitations of verses, choral speaking, during circle were opportunities for assessment of a variety of language skills. During one block, Laura's students learned and recited this verse: "Forge me with fire a sword for my smiting. Fright to my foes and flame to my fighting. Shape me a shield, both forceful and fierce, stalwart and shapely to fend against fear." She said she assessed the performance mainly for clear speech, enunciation, articulation, projection. With verse recitations like this, teachers could also assess group harmony, dynamics, and expressive appropriateness. Another goal in Laura's verse was that children experience the sound of F and S. All the teachers said that they observed and listened carefully in order to know which individuals were leading and which following along in recitations, and thereby assessed individual speech, memory, and other capabilities. Lynn supplemented her assessments of math skills during circle games by having every student individually recite times tables during breaks. Assessment of student interest. Assessment of students' interest and enthusiasm is, of course, not unique to Waldorf classrooms. Conscientious teachers in educational settings make ongoing classroom assessments of the quality of student response to evaluate the effectiveness of instruction. What makes the assessment of experience? Are students involved, attentive, enjoying their work, doing their best? Noteworthy here is its essentiality in Waldorf pedagogy. If a student is observably excited about chemistry, it is probably because he has learned to work with and understands chemical notation, chemical processes, and the importance and application of knowledge of chemistry. But the reverse is possible. A student may appear bored and unengaged, but nonetheless be acquiring learning and skills. This is why multidimensional assessment discussed below was considered important. Number 3, continuous assessment of progress in math and language arts. All the teachers continuously assessed students' math and language skills in every block, regardless of the block subject. They assessed writing skills based on numerous writing assignments on main lesson topics, dictations that were copied into main lesson books, usually after being practiced one or more times, themed compositions, homework assignments, and in some blocks, personal journals or research reports. All the science blocks included in our data served as opportunities for teaching and assessing writing as well as scientific skills. Bill's students were required in chemistry to keep a journal of daily observation and experiments. Mary's students were required to keep a journal of observations of a chosen tree, which she assessed for a completion of a required number of entries as well as for writing skills. Other teachers assigned book reports or gave assignments in expositional, technical, and creative writing in botany, chemistry, geography, and physical blocks. We found that the amount of written work required by Waldorf teachers and produced by their students was exceptional. Teachers in all the grades told us that they required and made time for rewriting assignments until errors were corrected, and every written assignment enabled evaluation of multiple capabilities as well as subject-specific goals. Several teachers mentioned the close observations they made of the activity of writing. They noticed who took time and who rushed, who was focused and who was distracted. They told us that noticing details like posture and how the pencil or pen was held helped them understand the developing individuality of each child. It also helped alert them to a possible need for remediation. Games, mental math, and other activities in daily circle described in several examples above served as performance assessments of proficiency and progress in math, grammar, and spelling. Rosa, for example, assessed her fourth graders' math skills by having them daily recite times tables, usually accompanied by various clapping or stamping patterns. She could identify which students knew them well and which students were just following along. She planned to work further with those who were unsure. Math was a main lesson subject, with specific focus on algebra, measurements, business math, decimals, or other topics, depending on the grade, in every grade. Teachers often set up specific practical problems to be solved by students working together in groups. Number 4. Teachers' end-of-block assessments were multidimensional. As each block ended, the variety of the kinds of assessments teachers made of both class and individual attainment was noteworthy. The evidence used to calculate success or failure in meeting block goals was always cumulative and multidimensional. Many education scholars recommend collecting information for making assessments in a variety of ways: written work, observation, oral questioning, all methods continually used by Waldorf teachers. For example, Erasian, 2005, pages 10, 12, 32 through 34, Wiggins, 1998, others that we discuss in Chapter 7. In Johnson's 2011 discussion, the various pieces of evidence are called the building blocks of assessment. The pieces of evidence included both performances and products, participation in subject-related projects and activities, for example, performance activities like science experiments or math drills, as discussed above, diagrams, drawings, and other art assignments, a variety of written assignments, demonstrations of sensory-motor capabilities in circle, participation in recall and discussion, students' evaluation of their own and their peers' work, and in the higher grades, results on homework, quizzes, and tests. Vignette 5, Beverly's 7th Grade Astronomy Research Project. The main assignment of Beverly's 7th Grade Astronomy block was a group research project culminating in individual student presentations to the class. She gave detailed instructions with clear expectations that, she said, were designed to enable full participation by students of all levels. She put them into 7 groups of 3 and 4 each. Each group was expected to plan research on a topic using at least 2, or preferably 3, library sources, submit an outline and draft, carry out the research, and make a class presentation with handouts and visual aids. Students turned in individual finished reports from 5 to 8 pages long with a bibliography, which they proofread and corrected themselves. She expected the reports to have an introduction, illustrations, an important facts page, and optional feature boxes. She provided a list of suggested topics: biographies of important stars, the solar system in relation to the Earth and its seasons, planets near the Earth, planets far from the Earth, figures important in the history of astronomy, lunar cycles, and historical perspectives on the nature of the universe. She assessed individual and group work, both written and oral performance, at every stage of the assignment. She had criteria for development of research skills, comprehension of topic, success in collaboration, and capabilities like diligence and attention to detail. In addition to this project, the work of the block included real-time observation of the night sky, a field trip to an observatory, a diagram of Ptolemaic theory in main lesson books, and work towards specific goals in spelling, vocabulary, and grammar, about 12 words a week tested on Fridays. We remark here that any single piece of work or activity was usually multivalent for assessment. It served for assessing progress in more than one area of development. For example, a completed written assignment was assessed for capability in following directions, creativity, neatness, as well as mastery of content. In a recall discussion, teachers were usually interested in how a student answered a question, as evidence of independent thinking, for example, as well as in the correctness of the answer. When teachers monitored beanbag tossing, combined with times table recitation, they assessed hand-eye coordination, brain-body synchrony, social sensitivity and alertness, as well as math skills. Group projects. Group projects, like the one in Beverly's astronomy block, were multivalent for assessment. She assessed students' presentations simultaneously for comprehension of material, ability to reason, application of knowledge, research skills, organization of ideas, clarity of expression, creativity and designing features, as well as ability to cooperate, share responsibility, and follow through. She corrected work at every stage from outlines to oral critiques. See Vignette 5. The role of recall in assessment. The daily discussion, in which teachers guided students in recalling the previous day's material, was an opportunity for assessment of content understanding. They noted, as criteria, who remembered details, who remembered the sequence, and who is able to summarize. On one morning, not one student in Lynn's class wanted to begin the retelling of the story in question. So she put them in pairs and had them tell the story to each other, after which they all eagerly and capably joined in a class review. Teachers in the higher grades had assessment criteria for more intellectual and creative abilities that are expected at that level, such as evidence in students' retelling for new insights, any ability to make inferences or connections to other information, and an ability to make appropriate generalizations. We asked teachers to give us specific examples of how they question students in oral recall, for the phrasing of questions itself should be a teaching method. Not unexpectedly, we found that the kinds of questions asked varied with the grades. Our third and fourth grade teachers asked both direct recall questions like, "Do you remember?" from yesterday's story, and thought and imagination stimulating questions like, "What do you think he would have done next?" Stimulating imaginative reflection was important in higher grades discussions as well. Clara asked her sixth graders in the economics block to think about how they would manage to meet their needs if they were completely isolated, in order that they immerse themselves in an imagination of self-sufficiency. The teachers of the three higher grades used most of the different kinds of questions recommended by Erasian, 2005, pages 137 to 141. For stimulating remembering and reflection, the sixth and seventh grade teachers asked many such questions. For example, what would you need to know in order to, in chemistry class, aiming to develop their capacity for inference, Clara asked her students, why should carbonated soda bubble on marble? To answer this, they had to build on something they already knew and take it further. In the history block, Clara asked her sixth graders, how is the expansion of Greece different from the expansion of Rome? And why was it the right time for the plebeians to revolt? When Bill's seventh graders were learning about the multi-ethnic nature of Kublai Khan's empire, he asked them to reflect on the role of tolerance in society. Such questions were important for bringing a moral dimension to the discussion of history, he said. Very often, teachers deliberately left questions unanswered, expecting students to reflect overnight and come back with their thoughts. They thought this strategy would result in fairer and more valid assessment of comprehension, giving students enough time for reasoning, reflection, and problem solving is always beneficial in terms of learning outcomes, according to some scholars. For example, Schoenfeld, 2008, Starko, 2010, pages 27 to 29. The role of homework in assessment. All the teachers in our study gave their students homework. The principle of age appropriateness was applied in regard to amount of time and content, but whatever was assigned was required. The third and fourth grade teachers expected that children spend only 10 minutes on two or three nights of the week. They were concerned mainly to establish a rhythm for homework. They gave simple assignments that they wanted the children to enjoy. In most grades, the homework included spelling and vocabulary words related to the block subject, from 10 to 20 new words per week depending on the grade. In most Waldorf schools, teachers do not assign any homework in the first two grades. Many defer homework until fourth or even fifth grade. Waldorf educators believe that a teacher who knows his students will well discern when and how much homework would be beneficial and useful for learning. Many students in Waldorf schools take music lessons, and parents expect practice time nightly in addition to time spent on homework. Also, all Waldorf students learn to play the recorder, and their class teachers expect some practice time at home for this as well. By 7th and 8th grade, and in Waldorf high schools, the amount of homework assigned is usually equivalent to that in non-Waldorf schools. Our 6th and 7th grade teachers had substantial and always firm expectations. Clara gave her 6th graders homework four nights a week, consisting of exercises in grammar, math, or work pertaining to the block subject. She had them write down their homework assignments in a notebook, which they had to show her before going outside at break time. She expected them to incorporate whatever grammar lessons they were working on into their compositions for the block subject. Depending on the block subject, she added other homework. During one history block, she assigned a weekly composition to be done at home, which she returned to them with their corrections for rewriting. Assessment with quizzes and tests. The 5th through 7th grade teachers regularly gave written spelling and vocabulary tests in order to assess whether students were meeting objectives in this area. The 3rd and 4th grade teachers assessed these skills by means of activities, games, and oral response, usually contrived in order to enable all students to do well. For example, when Rosa gave her 4th grade spelling quizzes, she put the answers on the board and took note of which children needed this support. Laura used a spelling game in which her 4th graders stood on the chairs and after spelling a word correctly, they could sit down. The words were all on the board and they were allowed to look if they needed help. To assess competence in the main lesson subject, teachers of higher grades, in our study, the 2 5th, 1 6th, and 2 7th grade teachers, gave comprehensive skills and content tests at the end of every block. Bill's chemistry test included short answer questions, definitions, filling in a chart, filling in blanks, identification of chemical symbols, and 2 of 6 possible short essay questions asking for descriptions of chemical processes. Clara's geology test consisted of short answer questions, true and false questions, matching rocks with rock families, a required drawing of the rock cycle, identification of 10 rocks from a display table, and 3 essay questions chosen from 8 possible. She offered extra credit for answering extra essays or identifying more than 1 of the required number of rocks. Beverly's end-of-block algebra test consisted of 9 short answer questions. For example, what are the rules for multiplication of integers? 1 bonus question and 2 pages of problems. She had her students grade their own tests and figure their grades as a percentage of a total number of points. Tests were passed into her. One feature that stands out in any comparison of Waldorf with non-Waldorf practice is the absence of external testing in the Waldorf teachers' repertoire of assessment strategies. Nor do Waldorf teachers at the elementary level make use of tests written by outside experts, such as those provided by textbooks. They may consult them, but they design their own tests to meet the specific needs of their class at a given time and to measure students' comprehension of the content that they have tried to impart during instruction. Erasion, 2005, suggests guidelines for the construction by teachers of fair and efficient in-class tests, pages 157 to 160. Waldorf teachers' in-class tests conform in most respects to these guidelines. For example, that they cover only information and skills that have been addressed during instruction. In any case, the results of in-class testing are only one of many factors in a practice of multidimensional assessment that takes into account class participation, main lesson book work, and other indicators of cognitive, affective, creative, artistic, social, attentiveness engagement areas of development. Examples of multidimensional end-of-block assessment. At the end of every block, teachers aggregated multiple pieces of evidence to make individual and class assessments of progress toward that block's subject-specific goals. Some examples follow. Bill based his evaluation of students' proficiency in chemistry on their journals, observations of daily experiments, writing assignments for main lesson books, experiment write-ups, dictations, essays, sketches and diagrams, a chart of Greek elements, performance in lab experiments, covering combustion, density, chemical change, crystals, testing for acids and bases, oxidation, and other phenomena. Daily oral review and discussion, results of weekly quizzes, and performance on a comprehensive end-of-block test. Clara's assessments of students' attainment in the Roman history block, from the founding of Rome to the Punic Wars, were based on 4 completed compositions that had been rewritten twice, having been evaluated for punctuation, spelling and grammar, as well as content. Several complex border designs inspired by Roman art, artistic charts, made by some students, of the structure of Roman society of patricians, plebeians, and other different offices of the government. Satisfactory memorization and recitation of 3 poems, 2 seasonal and 1 in both Latin and English. The learning of a Romanian folk dance, and also 2 new songs and parts. Participation in daily recall of the material, and performance of an oral quiz. During the year, Carl taught his 5th grade 3 ancient culture blocks, 4 weeks each, covering Indian, Persian, Egyptian, and Greek history and civilization. He based assessment of students' progress toward subject comprehension on 13 written assignments for all 3 blocks, varying from 2 to 4 handwritten pages each. All students completed the minimum. Some asked for and were given lengthier assignments, including 3 dictations, 1 copied in Greek from the blackboard, another from Homer in translation, 3 free compositions based on his narrations and class discussions, and 7 pages of drawings, individually elaborated from suggestions on handouts or blackboard illustrations, including a hand-drawn map of Greece and the Greek alphabet. He also assessed participation in learning and reciting 2 poems from Greek sources and in a Greek-inspired pentathlon at another Waldorf school. Only 2 of his history blocks fell within the period of our data collection. He later provided us with this summary of the work of all 3 blocks. By the end of her 3rd grade grammar block, Claudia had assessed 12 completed pages of subject-related main lesson work, including a title page, the long poem about types of sentences, and compositions on what a sentence is and on different parts of speech. She evaluated students' drawings of the cursive letters she had expected them to learn. She had observed and evaluated their performance in diverse games, recitations, and other language-related activities of circle time. Beverly's assessments of class and individual attainment in 7th grade chemistry were based on observation of the quality of students' engagement in all subject-related activities, students' participation in demonstrations, experiments, and discussions, artistic renderings of the process of combustion and other experiments, completion of main lesson book assignments, 15 different essays, drawings, and diagrams, and results of a test given at the end of the block. She made a provisional judgment that as a group, the class had not advanced beyond the beginning level of understanding. She would plan the next chemistry block to build on and progress onward from this one. Mary's block end assignments in 5th grade botany were based on the completion of the required number of illustrated compositions, the parts of the plant, the difference between higher and lower life forms, life cycles of plants, and other topics. A minimum of 15 entries in students' tree journals, her observation of their engagement in the nature hike, homework, and quizzes on 15 new botany-related vocabulary and spelling words per week, and demonstrated learning of 1 new poem and 1 new song each week. Lynn based her assessments of her 3rd graders' progress in their 2nd math measuring block on their participation in 15 different activities or demonstrations, 10 pages of main lesson book work, 10 math worksheets, and 9 language arts assignments, sentences using subject-related vocabulary. Beverly assessed attainment of her main goal for the physiology block, that students learn how the human body works, including functions of the systems, by observing their engagement in activities, taking each other's pulses, measuring changes in circulation accompanying different rhythms and speeds in beanbag passing game, dramatization of the digestive system, oral presentations, food tasting, evaluating their written assignments, dictations, food and sleep journals, compositions, including 1 based on an interview conducted with parents about their birth, others on the digestive and circulatory systems, and a description of a healthy menu with recipes, evaluating their diagrams and drawings of body systems and the food pyramid, spelling tests, they were to learn 45 new words, and an end-of-block test. She also had them demonstrate genetic processes using Joules and led a question and answer session with anonymously submitted questions on sex and sexuality. 5. Assessment of main lesson books. In every grade, Teachers expected that by the end of each block, every student would have compiled his or her work into a main lesson book, similar to what is understood as a portfolio. It was to contain dictations, original essays, drawings, diagrams, colored pencil illustrations, experiment write-ups, word lists, rules with examples, as in grammar or math, and other assignments required during the block. In most cases, students first wrote compositions as drafts, and dictations were taken down on lined paper. They later recopied their work on good white paper after correcting errors and incorporating teachers' suggestions. The value of having students rewrite assignments after receiving teachers' comments is well documented. Black and Others, 2004, page 13, Wiggins, 1998, pages 57 to 59. In addition, growing numbers of educators are recognizing the value of portfolios as good evidence of learning. Darling and Hammond, 2008, Lesher, 1995, Wiggins, 1998, pages 189 to 203. Starko, 2010, discusses the potential of portfolios for assessing creativity in relation to comprehension of subject matter, pages 298 to 301. Howard Gardner, 1993, has advocated portfolio-type assessments since his earliest work on multiple intelligences in the 1980s. He argues that portfolios are like a snapshot of a student's work at a particular moment in time, and therefore formative in nature. That is, they are not definitive of a student's potential, but rather represent achievement for a specific period of time that leaves room for transformation and evolution of learning. Lynn wrote, in answer to our question about the importance of the main lesson book, that the children will have to complete a title page, a composition about what a sentence is, five stanzas of a poem on different types of sentences covering five pages total for this poem, and five pages each with a composition about different kinds of words, nouns, verbs, adverbs, adjectives, and what we call ourselves. Except for the poem, these compositions were composed together with the children in class. That's 12 pages in the main lesson books for the subject matter of this block, grammar. Additionally, we worked on learning several new cursive letters, which were written 3 to a page in the form drawing books. In the lower grades, the paper used for main lesson books was fine grade, large white sheets measuring either 12 by 15 or 12 by 18 inches. Starting in grade 4 or 5, students worked on standard-sized sheets of 9 by 12 inches. In all grades, students illustrated written pages with borders and drawings. They often included in these books some homework sheets or problem sheets in math or their end-of-block tests. Each day's lesson included time to work on some content, a composition on the previous day's story, for example, for the main lesson book. Most teachers reviewed these books daily or weekly as assignments were added, as well as at the end of the block. Main lesson books were important for assessing individual students' attainment of the subject-specific goals for each block. Teachers gave considerable weight to effort and achievement demonstrated in these books. They evaluated them with several criteria in mind. Did the student complete the required number of pages? Did a gifted student demonstrate the extra effort of which she is capable? Were the drawings and borders done with attention and the highest level of competence for that individual? Was the writing neat? Were errors in spelling and grammar in composition drafts corrected after being returned to students? Did the content show good comprehension of the topic? Did she follow directions? For dictations, did he listen closely? Did the work show the level of creativity of which that student is capable, for example, in embellishing the dictated version of the story? The role of artistic activity in assessment. As described in Chapter 4, teachers planned artistic work for every block, including even science and math blocks. Students' main lesson books included drawings, border designs, and other artwork that was assigned for every main lesson block, regardless of the subject. These artistic activities provided both processes and products related to that subject that the teachers assessed usually on a daily basis. They assigned and assessed the drawings, colored pencil illustrations, page borders, and in some blocks, sculpture or handwork that were integrated into the teaching of main lesson subjects. Most of these were included in the main lesson books. In every grade through fifth, teachers assigned form drawing. They said that form drawing enabled them to assess development and fine motor skills, hand-eye coordination, aesthetic sensibility, and flexibility in thinking. Teachers did not primarily assess artistic ability per se, since the goal was not to train artists, though it was assumed that every child has artistic potential and aesthetic sensibility. Rather, as was the case with form drawing, they said they used student art as evidence for development of capabilities like sensory acuity, awareness of patterns and forms, spatial relationships, balance, hand-eye coordination, imagination and creativity, concentration, persistence, completion of assignments, neatness, accuracy, and other aptitudes and dispositions that are considered as important in the development of the whole child as our cognitive or intellectual abilities. In the lower grades, teachers usually provided a model or an example that the children copied on the blackboard or held up in front of the class. Students were free to choose variations in color or design. Our 5th, 6th, and 7th grade teachers reported giving students considerable freedom, with varying amounts of guidance, in creating drawings and borders for main lesson pages or a range of suggested pictures to copy or adapt. Students did watercolor paintings outside of the main lesson period, in most cases with a different teacher, and usually of a subject related to the block theme. Clara's students in geology, for example, made colored drawings of a karst landscape, the Earth's interior, volcanoes, and a sedimentary rock landscape. She evaluated them for correctness and for artistic values in relation to the individual's abilities. Rosa's students drew colorful pictures of Viking ships in Norse mythology. In zoology, they drew an octopus, different kinds of seaweed, coral, fish, and other sea creatures. This 4th grade block is also called Human and Animal because it addresses the interdependence and interrelatedness of these two realms. In botany, Carl assigned colored drawings of the different parts of flowers, different kinds of algae, and a variety of other plants growing in their respective ecosystems. During the physiology block, Beverly's 7th graders drew silhouettes and made portraits in their art classes. In our experience, all Waldorf teachers begin as early as 1st grade, encouraging students to take care and do their best work when working on main lesson book pages. Children are taught how to plan a page and to frame their work within borders. This helps them orient themselves in the space on the page. This helps them orient themselves in the space of the page, to plan ahead, and to envision what needs to be there. For some children, this practice is critical for developing organizational abilities. The work of Eisner, for example, 2002-2005, on the relationship between art and cognition, which we discuss in Chapter 6, suggests the importance for all learning of engaging students in the visual arts at an early age. We have omitted discussion of music and drama, both of which are integral to the Waldorf curriculum. Singing and playing the recorder are usually part of morning activities in every grade. Every grade does a play every year. According to Waldorf pedagogy, music and drama, like the practice of the visual arts, cultivate and enable assessment of important cognitive, affective, and social capabilities. 6. Teachers assessed in order to inspire and motivate toward further learning and in ways that minimized inappropriate competition. All the teachers construed the purpose of assessment as support for rather than measurement of learning. They spoke of appropriate competition, in which students share in each other's achievements, as serving that educative purpose, along with group assessments and self-assessment. They mentioned the value of group work and group assessments for motivation. Several said that student self-assessment, used mainly in the middle and higher grades, helps students take responsibility for their own progress. This view of the purpose of assessment follows from the Waldorf understanding of the purpose of education, the life goal or the inspiring of lifelong learning, see Chapter 2. According to the Research Institute for Waldorf Education, in Waldorf pedagogy, the purpose of assessment will be to determine whether a teacher is drawing forth capacities from his or her students, activating the resources of their entire organisms, not whether the students are retaining certain information primarily through eye and ear. Mitchell and others, 2008, page 4. In other words, assessment of students is actually assessment of the teacher's efficacy in forwarding the goal of education as Waldorf educators see it, that is, in activating the whole child. Many journal entries indicated teacher sensitivity to students' feelings. Teachers were explicit about being concerned for the self-esteem and self-confidence of students, and also about their hope that students would enjoy the work. They tried to design projects and assignments that would enable every student to experience success and the satisfaction of achievement. A concern to motivate further learning accounts for our documented frequency of student self-assessment, group and peer assessment, absence of ranking, and a general avoidance of individual comparison. In Waldorf pedagogy, student self-assessment and peer assessment are learning goals in themselves as well as means for getting student products assessed. Helping students to know when they are wrong, to realize what they don't yet know that they need to know, this is, ideally according to pedagogy, always present as a goal in Waldorf teachers' minds. Peer assessment also serves social goals. It gets students comfortable with working with each other and learning that it is okay to make mistakes and that mistakes are in fact opportunities to learn. Among scholars who advocate student self-assessment and students taking responsibility for their own learning are Black and others, 2004, pages 97 to 98, Starko, 2010, pages 278 to 281, and Stiggins, 2001. Several teachers regularly paired students in order to grade or evaluate homework or other assignments. The practice of having paired peer assessment may at first glance appear to generate rather than minimize comparison. In these classrooms, however, it was clear that teachers had cultivated over time an atmosphere of cooperation and group solidarity. Assessment in pairs was considered helpful for building sensitivity, encouraging openness, and developing other worthwhile abilities in the social domain. The results of the paired assessment carried no punitive consequences. Students in Mary's class usually compared their math homework in pairs and then recorded their own results on bar graphs, simultaneous self-evaluation, and math practice. In her geography block, Laura had students write a composition about their field trip to Great Meadows, which they then exchanged with another student who made suggestions for improvement. She followed up by correcting spelling and grammar and returning the work with suggestions for students to self-correct, but gave no grades. The emphasis here and in other examples we documented was always toward the common goal of helping everyone achieve individual best performance. The Waldorf view of individual competition is nuanced. Competition that inspires or motivates the individual in the direction of self-improvement is positive. What is to be avoided or downplayed is competition for the purpose of defeating or diminishing the self-esteem of another person. Like paired peer assessment, assessments conducted by students engaged in a group project also served social goals. When groups of three or four students worked together and then evaluated each other's results, one teacher told us, it sparked competition among groups that was friendly and fun because no single individual was an object of praise or critique. Group assessments helped build healthy group dynamics. Knowing students so well, the teachers were, they thought, savvy and careful in setting up such groups to maximize good social results. Good results are achieved when teachers give students plenty of time for reasoning and problem solving and have them talk about mathematical ideas and reflect on their own work. Schoenfeld, 2008. The effectiveness of small group inquiry has been confirmed by tests given later, according to Barron and Darling Hammond, 2008. A collaborative learning has good outcomes in terms of social skills and self-esteem. Because many of the circle activities entailed group response, these were opportunities for making assessments of individuals without singling them out. During a math game played with rhythm sticks, Laura had the children call out the answer, allowing them to do so even after the right answer was called, and then she let them decide together what the right one was. In this way, all the children contributed to finding out and experienced the value of wrong answers. Another assessment strategy that helped both minimize excessive competition and maximize individual responsibility for work was to have students assess their own work. Some of the teachers noted that the development of the students to honestly self-assess was itself a goal, and they all set up frequent student self-assessment activities in order simultaneously to cultivate and assess progress in the development of this higher level ability. One teacher pointed out that the ability to self-assess and judge one's own work impartially was critically important for all future learning. For example, at the end of the astronomy block, Beverly had students fill out a lengthy project self-evaluation that asked them to rate their own performances on 27 different tasks on a scale of 1 to 4. 1, I forgot. 2, I gave it a cursory attempt. 3, I did what was required. 4, I did my very best work. In order to do these ratings, students had to do considerable self-reflection. The tasks to be rated included, for example, I took clear and accurate notes. I thought about the material I read. I proofread my drafts and made revisions. I listened to the ideas of my project partners. I presented information in an organized way. I included illustrations that added meaning. In addition, Beverly did her own assessment. See Vignette 5. In Mary's botany block, the children were to memorize a poem about ants. She used the group recitation as a performance assessment of individual capabilities. Some students, she reported, memorized it overnight. She could see that the assurance of some helped to carry others along until they managed to learn it. In this way, a kind of group enthusiasm was generated, and no one was singled out or made self-conscious for being less capable. Observers of group recitation in the lower grades of Waldorf schools sometimes fail to understand the pedagogical benefits of group recitation and object to what they see as excessive conformity. According to Waldorf educators, young children gain self-confidence and courage through group participation rather than being asked to respond as individuals prematurely. This insight in the Waldorf approach is an important aspect of the developmental pedagogy. As the grades progress and children develop more self-awareness, teachers call in individuals with increasing frequency. The assessments of the teachers in our study were guided always by the principle of age appropriateness. Both the what and the how of assessment changed gradually as the grades progressed. As many examples above show, our third and fourth grade teachers assess knowledge, skills, and capabilities within the context of classroom activities designed to engage children enjoyably in the subject. In these lower grades, they did not use conventional paper and pencil tests, or computers, or assign grades. As the grades progressed, we documented teachers' increasing grading of their students' assignments, though often only with comments, and using teacher-generated written quizzes and comprehensive tests to supplement assessment of performance and other experiential basis for evaluating progress. To restate the Waldorf approach, the primary purpose of all assessment, whether classroom or formal, is pedagogical: to enhance student self-knowledge in regard to both achievement and need for improvement, and to encourage, inspire, and motivate them to continue to strive toward future learning goals. This understanding of the only warranted and legitimate purpose of assessment was confirmed in our case studies by teachers' descriptions of what, how, and why they assessed. The tracking, recording, and sharing of classroom assessments. The teachers in the study devised individual but similar systems for keeping track of their students' assignments and individual students' progress toward goals. These individualized systems tracked and recorded the continuous classroom assessments described above. They kept daily notes, or checklists, of in-class assignments, written work, projects, class participation, scores on quizzes and tests, and homework, and most looked daily at main lesson book pages that had been worked on that day. For tracking performance tasks, they reported using checklists and making notes. The content of the notes was different depending on the grade. Our third and fourth grade teachers said they continued their practice from teaching grades 1 and 2, of focusing more on how children were involved as a group in their activities and with individual social, emotional, and physical aspects than with academics. But they also began making notes about individual progress in academic subjects. These strategies, checklists, rating scales, and notes for evaluating performance tasks compare well with those recommended by scholars. For example, Brualdi, 1998A, Wiggins, 1998. Clara said that starting in fourth grade, she began tracking individual performance using rubrics, or lists of criteria that she set ahead of time and that she made sure the students understood. She always used criteria for artistic, written, and oral work, tracking, for example, whether and how many answers were complete, correct, and carefully done, and whether they showed understanding. For oral reports, did the student speak with confidence, enthusiasm, clarity? Did he demonstrate accurate and wide knowledge of the subject? Beverly, one of our seventh grade teachers, set up the rubric described above for students to self-evaluate their performance in the astronomy project. The third and fourth grade teachers usually, though not always, recorded their observations about large and small motor coordination in morning circle activities and recorder playing. All teachers reported making some notes on attitudes, social situations, emotional and behavioral concerns, matters of physical health, and in some cases, family issues. Claudia, teaching third grade, had a special tracking system for reading progress. Three times that year, she had each student read to her individually, making notes about their fluency, pronunciation, comprehension, and general reading level. Teachers' notes and checklists were aids in the preparation of parent-teacher conferences and for writing mid-year and end-of-the-year reports. This way of tracking was helpful for the teachers themselves as well as parents in understanding students' progress toward attainment of benchmarks in the Waldorf curriculum and standards set by the school. Examples of tracking systems they reported to follow. Bill kept a record book to check off the completed assignments of his seventh graders and another list for recording student work on a scale of 1 through 4, from unacceptable to superior work. But he told us that no one gets a rating of unacceptable because he requires students to continue working on a given assignment until it is acceptable. Rosa reviewed her fourth graders' work in their main lesson books daily, if possible, but at least weekly. When she saw that a child was not keeping up, as indicated by unfinished drawings or written work, she used the extra main lesson period to ensure that this child had time to complete the work. She kept a chart for each child and each subject noting completion of assignments, homework, in-class written work, artwork. She also kept a page for each child for noting at the end of each day her observations of social, emotional, or health aspects. In evaluating the main lesson assignments, she used a scale. 1, complete and correct. 2, complete with small errors. 3, good start but got lost. 4, no attempt made. She followed up in every case as needed, she said. Clara had students hand in all assignments, drawings, compositions, dictations, and after reviewing them, she returned them with a star if they were acceptable, or, if not, with a note about corrections to be made. For example, spelling mistake, line 3. Those needing corrections had to be turned in again until they merited a star. She numbered every assignment and kept a chart of completed assignments for each student. She also made notes about issues that she needed to discuss with parents. Claudia used a plan book for recording students' finished work and for keeping notes about participation in recall, participation in activities, and social issues. For each assignment, she listed on a separate sheet of paper the criteria by which she evaluated the work. She met with the children individually to go over mistakes and omissions. Mary looked at all main lesson books each day and wrote notes to the students about what needed correcting. She kept a record book in which she noted completion of assignments and participation in discussions and had a form for each child for noting her impressions. Like the other teachers from her school, she used a 2 through 5 rating scale in her records in preparation for the midterm rating charts required by that school for grades 4 through 8. What stood out in these tracking descriptions was each teacher's concern to identify problems not for the purpose of assigning a rank or a mark, but in order to take action toward enabling the student to correct what was incorrect, to finish what was incomplete, and to improve work that she knew could be improved by a given student. The purpose of tracking was the same as the purpose of assessment in general, to support further learning and better quality student work. Collaborative assessment. Teachers shared assessments with students, parents, and colleagues. All the teachers reported sharing classroom assessments regularly with students, whether by noting a score, number right out of a total, on a spelling quiz, or verbally during activities. They gave feedback, they said, whenever they observed and evaluated interest, attentiveness, an instance of good or faulty reasoning, healthy or dysfunctional social relationships, whatever they deemed part of the learning experience. The teachers regarded the giving of timely feedback, comments, praise, critique, caution, as integral and indispensable to classroom instruction, especially but not only in activities like spelling games, mental math, recitation, singing, and recorder playing. The group projects that were often part of block learning usually included peer assessments, students critiquing each other. Teachers also shared assessments with other faculty in both formal and informal venues. For example, teachers from the Seaside Waldorf School stated that they discussed student assessments at weekly pedagogical meetings, along with any concerns pertaining to the curriculum, the student body, schedules, or school events. At these meetings, they told us, class teachers discussed and helped each other with suggestions or gave feedback to each other about classroom activities, academics, social issues, or classroom management. The middle school teachers, grades 6, 7, and 8, met to set the criteria for writing reports. Most of the teachers mentioned that they had shared individual students' problems with the parents in telephone conversations as well as in the regular parent-teacher conferences. Parent-teacher conferences were occasions for full sharing of assessment of all areas of development. They fall into the category of formal assessment and are discussed as such below. Faculty review of teachers' classroom assessments and formal reports is a regular and essential part of Waldorf school systems of teacher mentoring and teacher evaluation. The three schools in our study all conducted peer evaluations that included scrutiny of the teacher's student assessments. Waldorf faculties believe that such systems help ensure against inappropriate teacher subjectivity and help assure the teacher's assessment of students, whether day-to-day in the classroom or in final written reports, reflect the most accurate possible evaluation of academic, social, character, and physical areas of development, and are aligned with standards for student learning. While our teachers had latitude and flexibility in how they individually tracked class and student progress for making final assessments, that is, writing reports and conducting parent-teacher conferences, they followed policies and procedures set by the College of Teachers of each school. These were assumed by the teachers to be in compliance with policies and procedures for reporting student assessments that are stipulated by the Association of Waldorf Schools of North America, ASNA. Assessment of students with learning and behavioral challenges. As is the case for most teachers today, Waldorf teachers are challenged by growing numbers of students who are difficult to teach or manage. The class profiles provided by our teachers show a typical range of developmental and cognitive abilities. See Appendix A. How our teachers worked specifically with these students on a daily basis was not a focus of our research. However, we asked them in follow-up interviews to tell us how, in general or in most cases, they knew that a student needed help and to describe the usual procedures in place in their schools for follow-up. For the Waldorf perspective on attention-related disorders, see Payne, Zajonc, and Hadley, ND. The website of the Research Institute for Waldorf Education has links to articles relevant to this and related topics. See www.waldorffreesearchinstitute.org. In all three schools, there were regular procedures for faculty collaboration for addressing challenging academic or social situations for remediation. Five of the nine teachers stated that their nightly reflection usually focused only on those students who had shown evidence that day of having difficulties. Lack of concentration, conflicts with peers, unusual struggling with assignments, indication that the workload was too light or too heavy, and so forth. Claudia gave a specific example. She told us of a boy in her third grade who never seemed to be able to finish copying assigned work from the blackboard. She had noticed he was always looking up and down. It was in her nightly reflection that she realized that he was not able to see each word as a whole. So she put a copy of the work on a music stand in front of him, and he was able to do much better. She recommended to the care group in her school that he be assessed for learning challenges and he received remedial services. Bill told us that he would know by noticing something amiss over time, for example, something in the behavior or something in the way the student responded, or not, to the curriculum. He would then talk this over with a colleague, confer with other teachers who teach the student, for example, the special subject teachers, and speak with the parents. If the level of concern rose, he would take the problem to the pedagogical committee. This group carried responsibility for all student evaluation in this school. It would discuss the problem and make recommendations. At this time, the school had both a tutorial program and a remedial program. The tutorial program supported students who were not performing academically as well as they should. The school contracted with two outside professional tutors who would come in and provide tutoring during the main lesson or extra main lesson period or some other time as arranged. These tutors had credentials in special education. The school paid for some of this tutorial support. In some cases, the parents paid. Tutoring for older students mostly happened after school. Younger students were never kept after school. For remedial services for learning disabilities and behavioral challenges, the school worked with the public school system to determine the appropriate steps. In some cases, the school faculty was able to provide the needed services. In cases where a student's needs exceeded the school's resources, the student would probably be enrolled in the local public school system, which has considerably greater resources for providing remediation. These procedures were typical for the three schools. Teachers would share problematic assessments with other faculty, specifically with the faculty groups that were responsible for considering students' needs for remediation. These groups would take into account written mid-year reports and end-of-year narrative reports as indicators of the need for special remedial measures. In some cases, either the College of Teachers as a whole or a subcommittee would make recommendations for assessments by outside agencies for possible learning disabilities. At Seaside Waldorf School, the care group met weekly to address individual situations and arrange for extra assistance and remedial services to support students with learning difficulties or other challenges. This group included remedial teachers trained to work with children with conditions like dyslexia and dysgraphia, and assisted class teachers in planning remediation. Assessment for learning problems was done in second grade. The faculty worked with the local school district's Department of Education to provide testing if needed and remedial services not available in the school itself. Teachers provided extra lesson time to all students who needed this in order to succeed in the classroom. The school also offered music therapy, therapeutic eurythmy, and painting therapy, and had an Orton Gillingham tutor on campus. Eurythmy is an art of movement expressing speech and music using gestures, color, and form. Orton Gillingham is an instructional approach for use with students who have difficulties with reading, writing, and spelling of the sort associated with dyslexia. Cheshire Waldorf School had reading specialists and other remedial teachers on staff. An educational support committee, which included these teachers, oversaw the arranging of support for students with learning challenges and special needs. Cheshire also conducted a special assessment of students at the beginning of second grade, which was focused on developmental benchmarks and which helped identify different learning styles of individuals. In Waldorf education generally, for students with learning challenges not serious enough to warrant an IEP, multiple approaches for covering material, writing assignments, oral recitation, practical activities and projects, artwork, multisensory engagement would provide options for students with different learning styles. This should result in more reliable assessments of a student's true abilities. Another advantage inherent in Waldorf pedagogy and evident in our teachers' journals is the Waldorf teachers' freedom from the constraints on content and pacing of textbooks. Flexibility in planning instruction, choosing sources, and scheduling activities enables them to address most situations.